Australia has a major reliance when it comes to cars. It's estimated that more than 72% of Australians rely on their cars for daily use. But what's most concerning is the dominance of heavy vehicles, including SUVs, which exacerbate our climate change, causing carbon emission, air pollution, and contributes to the prevalence of road trauma. In January of this year alone, SUVs and light commercial vehicles like utes made up 83% of all new cars sold. Limiting the presence of these vehicles on our roads is essential, but improving accessibility to alleviate our overall car reliance must also be considered. To discuss this further, I'm joined by Dr. Mark Stevenson, Professor of Urban Transport and Public Health, and the Director of Transport, Health and Urban Systems Research Lab at the University of Melbourne. Thank you so much for joining me on The Record today.
Hey, you're welcome.
So what do you attribute Australia's reliance on cars to, as well as the significant uptake of heavy vehicles on our roads?
Look, good questions. I think the reliance in Australia of private motor vehicles is one really about how young our cities are, that our cities evolved basically at the time of motorisation. And so clearly we planned our cities for access around the cities using private motor vehicles and limited public transport use. So we're really sort of seeing that play out now in a big way, sort of 100, 200 years later. So planning is one of the key elements here. And when we model cities around the world in our research lab, we had around 170 cities that we modelled. And in that instance, what we found was clearly, you know, patterns of access to public transport, you know, really reduced the prevalence of air pollution. And in cities across Australia and North America, those were deemed the motor cities, the ones that have been built and rely upon private motor vehicles. So planning is key, and that is one of the reasons why we see this overrepresentation of vehicles as our main transport system in Australia and Australian cities. And the growth in the size of the vehicle is probably a little bit more complex as well, because I think it relates in some ways to the sort of policies that we have around fringe benefits tax, which encourage some vehicles over others. And I guess, you know, in cities like Perth, where we have, you know, there's a significant focus around the mining and industry, there's, you know, obviously an overrepresentation of those larger vehicles in cities like Perth as well.
And I've noticed that there's a bit of an increase in people having those quite big, I guess, American four-wheel drives that look almost too big for our roads in car parks. What are the impacts of importing these cars that our infrastructure isn't really built for?
Look, you know, again, they are incredibly large, but the impact of those vehicles is probably more around, and what we don't really talk about, around the impact they have on the environment, and particularly the quality of our air. So that's where we're seeing, you know, real challenges. So there's clearly there's a space issue and parking and the like as well, and then there's also the size of those vehicles when you come in conflict with pedestrians, cyclists, is just catastrophic. So there's all of those sort of elements as well. And we've discussed that in the past, but we have done very little to mitigate that. But the key area we haven't really focused on is the role that these very large vehicles, often they're diesel as well, are contributing to not only carbon emissions, but also particulate matter, which is what we know is strongly associated with lung disease.
So do we know how much heavy vehicles contribute to Australians' carbon emissions?
That's another good question. What we do know, some of the work that we're doing in our research lab, we're actually now estimating tailpipe emissions, and then we're building a life cycle assessment associated with that, so that we can get a good handle on the carbon the carbon emissions from the vehicle, both in the tailpipe and life cycle. So we're starting to do that, and that's just it's in its infancy. So to answer that question, we don't know, other than what the vehicle manufacturer has to publish as a consequence of having a vehicle in the market. But we also know that those sort of publications are fraught with error, as you may recall in relation to the Volkswagen challenges we had some 2 years ago, when they were clearly fudging the statistics in relation to their vehicle emissions. So we know that they are not particularly reliable, and we need much more independent assessment of emissions, and we're in the process of doing that, and we know it is considerable. It's the emissions from those large vehicles, and if they're diesel or any carbon fuel vehicles, is very considerable.
And I can imagine not only will it be have a bit of an impact on the environmental aspect, but I can imagine there might be a bit of an impact on our personal health as well.
Well, personal health, certainly. I mean, what's worrying, what prompted us to publish this in the medical journal was that, you know, we are in rapidly moving in towards a climate catastrophe, and one would hope that we're not, you know, relying on carbon, you know, on what we call internal combustion engines, all the carbon vehicles. And yet what we're seeing in Australia is an over-representation of those. And we're seeing not only just an over-representation of these carbon fuel vehicles, but we're seeing, as this article highlights, a greater proportion of Australians buying larger vehicles, which are greater emitters. So, we know that these SUVs emit around, 5 tonnes of CO2, equivalent annually. That's a huge amount of carbon. And we know, as we move into the challenging climate that we've just observed in the East Coast, what we're going to see in Northern WA, they're going to become much more frequent, and they're all a consequence of our lifestyle and how we move around our cities.
You're listening to On the Record. We're joined by Dr. Stevenson, and we're chatting about Australia's reliance on cars and the impacts of it. So heavy vehicles may be sometimes perceived as safer due to their size. Do they provide any additional safety on the roads?
So they certainly, the larger vehicle, in the event that you collide with something of similar size, they provide protection, most certainly. But they are incredibly aggressive in the road environment on anything other than another sort of vehicle of similar sort of size. So that's where the challenge lies. What we're trying to do is transition people out of relying on cars and into electric, bikes, e-bikes and the like. And cities like Perth, for example, that have, growing infrastructure for that, we should be seeing this transition rapidly occurring. And unfortunately, we're not seeing anything like what needs to be done. So yes, a very large vehicle, I mean, we're talking about these large SUVs, provide some protection for those travelling in them. If they hit something similar to that. But the flip side of that is they also pose incredible risk to those less vulnerable on the road networks, the smaller vehicles, the cyclists, the motorcyclists and the like. So it's not a win-win in any sense.
Now, the new vehicle efficiency standard was introduced in Australia at the start of 2025, which aims to limit high-emitting vehicles. Has the standard had much of an impact yet, and is it likely to reduce emissions enough?
One, it's not going to reduce emissions enough. Just by introducing that in Australia alone, Australia, in order to mitigate its carbon footprint at the moment, needs to reduce carbon emissions upwards of 73%. What we're promoting, or what the government's promoting, and what they believe they can achieve is hitting at about 42%. So we're way off what's required in order to mitigate carbon. So that's an important point. But what I'm very concerned about is if you look outside of Australia, you look at New Zealand, you look at the US, just in the US alone last week, they announced that they are going to repeal any vehicle emission standards, so that there will be no vehicle emission standards. So there will be no requirement that you must meet these targets. So what we're seeing is this worrying trend away from trying to mitigate carbon towards an individualistic type approach where we shouldn't be concerned about the environment in terms of how we travel and the planet. And so this is why I refer to we're heading into a climate catastrophe, because we're actually seeing a flip from everything we've been trying to achieve over the last 20 to 30 years overnight. And so I say this in New Zealand as well. They haven't actually started with the vehicle emissions, but they have removed many of the restrictions around environmental planning, so that you can actually mine wherever you wish and the like.
We've been having a conversation today about Australia's major reliance on cars and the introduction of heavy vehicles. Before we let you go, how can we aim to reduce reliance on our cars individually, as well as with regards to our city and transport infrastructure?
Look, another great question. I'm here for a public lecture I'm giving tonight at the University of Western Australia, and I'm meeting with government this afternoon. And these are some of the questions we're going to talk about. But there are opportunities, and I, originally from here, and could see that Perth could lead the way in this. In fact, I only just heard this morning that the new Labor government here appointed a minister for the environment and climate change, which I think is a really important move forward. But cities like Perth can, I think what we're really needing to do here is rethink what we mean by public transport. So if you just think about that, you have these electric cats that run around the city. They're sort of strategies that are really moving in the right direction. The challenge with them is they're limited in terms of the ability to move larger numbers of people. They have limitations in their time and their scheduling. And if you don't provide those sort of easy access and egress, to get people from point A to point B, it doesn't get utilized. So they're the sort of challenges we've got to really focus on. So there are potential, though, and there is potential in Perth for this to start to play out in a way that's quite different in other cities. So there's sort of things I'm going to talk about with the government today.
Dr. Stevenson, thank you so much for joining us on The Record. It's been such an interesting conversation about our reliance on cars and what kind of the issues are there.
Was it a reliance on cars?
Oh, well, increased reliance on cars.
Yeah. I mean, the issues were there, well, I can go on for hours about what's going to happen with the reliance on cars. But, I mean, if you think about it, you have a lot of your taxpayer funding is going to maintaining and growing your road network. There's a potential that could be redirected into other forms of transport systems that would facilitate access and equity across the network. And I think they're really important elements that cities like Perth need to be rethinking. And I'm quite critical of that in Melbourne as well. We do have quite good public transport, but we are continuing to spend, exorbitant funds just expanding our road networks. And we know from research that by building extra lanes on the roads, you don't actually, prevent or mitigate congestion. So it's not, something that you just build and resolve the challenge. You don't. It becomes more complex, and I will talk about that tonight in my lecture and just give some illustrations of what we see around the world of our way of dealing with the car dependency is by building and building, and it doesn't resolve the issue. So moving forward, cities like the reliance on motor vehicles, I think when we begin to think that transport is not about just private motor vehicle use, and is certainly an array of opportunities for people to think and consider, and shared transport can play a very, very big part in this. Uber and others, can play a role where you stipulate that there must be electric, so no carbon, but also it gives you an opportunity where multiple people can travel in one vehicle rather than the single, vehicle operator. So there's a whole bunch of strategies that can be put in place that start to move West Australians in particular, away from having to get into a car to go anywhere.
Does sound like there is a lot more for us to do in this space. Dr. Stevenson, thank you so much for joining us on The Record this morning and having a chat.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That was Dr. Mark Stevenson, Professor of Urban Transport and Public Health and the Director of the Transport, Health and Urban Systems Research Lab at the University of Melbourne. We were having a chat there about Australia's growing reliance on larger, heavier vehicles and its impact on climate change and our environment.